Before the homily, I just want to mention, back in September, I said that we would form a security council. I'd get some experts in security in our parish to just evaluate and come up with some kind of a plan so that we're a little more prepared for some of the terrible things that go on in this world. I've written about this in the bulletin, but just the Cliff Notes version here. What we came up with is we're forming security teams. They've been formed, actually. And every week at the Masses, at the 4, the 9, and the 11, we'll have four members of a security team. They'll all be outside wearing blue blazers and a Maltese cross lapel pin. And the purpose of that is twofold. One, all of them have had or will have this week training in de-escalation. So they're supposed to be able to see, help to identify problems and see if we can stop them before they ever get into our doors. And the other is to send a message that we're not a soft target. We're very fortunate because we only have three entrances to our church, so it's somewhat easier for us to do this. But it was our idea on the council that this would be a good way for us to be prepared. And they'll continue to have training throughout the year. We have quarterly training. And I'd like you to pray for them because they're making a big sacrifice. Anybody who's serving on a security team, it does not count for their Mass obligation. And so they're expected to still go to Mass as well as serve at another Mass. There'll also be two members at the 6:30 and the 5:30 on Sundays. And we'll start that next week and it'll continue to go. But after we get to Divine Mercy Sunday, we'll have different levels. So sometimes we might be there seems like there's not as great a threat, so we might not have four people at the big Masses. But anytime it's a big Mass, Christmas, Easter, and those things, or with our connections with the Wichita Police Department and the diocese, if we know of a threat, like right before Christmas when they threatened to bomb every Catholic school in Johnson County, then we'll always have our full force of the security team. And then finally, they will not be, and nor will they do any of the job of an usher. Their job is mainly outside of the church. So we won't be asking them to fill in as ushers. We need our ushers. In fact, we need more ushers. I'd like to encourage you, especially grown men, to sign up to be ushers. Sometimes we're supposed to have ushers at every door, grown adult ushers, and sometimes we're lucky to have two adults. And that's really not a good thing. It's not a bad thing to have the children help usher, but we need adults also at all the entrances as ushers. So I'd like to encourage you to think about that if you're able to help with that. Today in the gospel, it almost seems disjointed. In the beginning, Matthew is telling us about the Lord going up to Galilee, to the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, a land in great darkness. And then it ends with the call of four of the apostles. The land up in the north, which are the 10 tribes, the reason they were in darkness is because they did, after they separated from the southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin, they intermingled with the pagans and adopted many of their ways. And so when Isaiah says there's a land in darkness, he's not just talking about the Gentiles, although the Gentiles are also in darkness, but so were many of the people who lived in the northern kingdom. And Christ starts his ministry there. He's the light shining in the darkness. And he's going to slowly bring back many of those people. And then you get to St. Peter and John and James and Andrew. And it seems like these two things are unrelated, but I think they're absolutely related. It's a different light. These four men are faithful Jews. They're not part of the northern kingdom who have adopted the ways of the Gentiles. And when I listen to the calling of the apostles, I always think this particular gospel, I think of it in two ways. One, for me personally, and two, for all of us in a general way. For me personally as a priest, I think every priest can identify with this meeting with Christ. For me, it was a little over 30 years ago when the chaplain at Newman University said to me, "Have you ever thought about being a priest?" And in my adult life, up until then, it wasn't very many years, I had never thought about it. But a year and a half later, I was in the seminary. And it was that encounter with a priest of Jesus Christ who invoked something in my heart and soul that gave me the ability to do what Peter and James and John and Andrew did. It was a very powerful moment for me, and still is to this day. And then when I think of it in terms of every one of us, it's also a powerful reminder to me, and I hope to you, of the power of the gospel. When Jesus Christ speaks, it means something. Peter and James and John and Andrew, they didn't have to go back and say, "Now, I don't know if we want to accept this offer to come and follow him." They heard the word of Christ, and they got up and they followed Jesus Christ. They were willing, by the very words of his out of his mouth, to give up everything that they had. That's the power of the gospel. Even though most of you in here, that wouldn't be what you would do, sell everything and give to the poor and come follow Christ, because you have your vocation already. Many of you are married, you have children. But just because you're not called to do the same thing that Peter and James and John and Andrew did, doesn't mean you're not supposed to be moved by the gospel. And every week or every day for some of us, we come to Mass and we hear the gospel. But there's a difference between hearing and listening. Sometimes I can hear something that's going on over there, but it doesn't mean I'm listening to it. But we're supposed to listen to the words of Christ because they should evoke in us a change at a fundamental level, that we receive the word and are conformed to it. Sometimes the way that we like to live our Christianity is we want it to conform to us, but that is not the message of the gospel. Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. That's not a message of "I'll conform to you" from the Lord. It's supposed to be we conform to him. And we know by that confirmation that we become what we're supposed to be. We become who we're supposed to be. And so when we listen to this gospel, the light of Christ that shines in the darkness, one of the first movements, of course, of Christ is to dispel sin. And sin, after it's dispelled, then it leaves room for the light of Christ to really grow in our hearts and in our souls. And so I think today we should ask the Lord to help us to be faithful. Ask him to help us to have a wonder and awe at the very words that he spoke in the gospel, and a deep desire and the will to conform our lives to the gospel. That makes a convincing Christian witness. And it also means that the light of Christ will grow stronger and stronger in us, which then we can do in our own way what Peter and James and John and Andrew did. We can be a light to others. We'll be hearing that in just a few weeks when we start the Sermon on the Mount. You are the light of the world. You are the salt of the earth. We can only be that if we conform ourselves to the gospel and live in the light of Christ.